My name's Ali Brown, and this is Brian, who's with me on my official timekeeper for this to make sure I don't run over at all. But we're from Robert Gordon University, and I want to tell you a little bit about a project that our students undertook with us back 2 years ago now, but also where we've actually taken that research in the time period since, because we've actually continued that on and part of as part of a programme of research as well. So hopefully you'll find it a little bit interesting in terms of some of the challenges that we have encountered as almost an additional layer of concerns surrounding Twitter and the use of social media in general from being a healthcare professional student as well. So where it all began, this kind of was where we started. We didn't start with research, we started by engaging with social media as lecturers on Twitter, but also through trying out some of the kind of blogs to support some of our students learning around about topics which they find a little bit more difficult to engage with in a lecture setting. So things like legislation, which can be quite dry to teach. We delivered the lectures, but we blogged about them as well so that they could see our thoughts on it and actually how we contextualised that subject in terms of some of the practice examples that we used as well. And we find that to be quite helpful in terms of students could access that at any time that they wanted when it was coming up to studying and the, for exams, and they were traditionally maybe on jumping on emails to ask tens of questions to you in one go. They could go and look at the blog, and actually it helped them to refresh their memory. So it wasn't just lecture slides or the notes they'd made, it was around about the thoughts that we were giving them as well. But we also filmed a number of different podcasts around about patient safety, which we used in modules, and we filmed videos around about consultation skills, looking specifically at patient groups where students didn't have the opportunity to interact with those groups in the course. So thinking at that point we didn't interact with preschool children, but it formed a large part of who we I suppose the group of people who we consult with in a community pharmacy. They also in the undergraduate course didn't interact at all with methadone patients, so we filmed some videos around about those interactions that we would have with some of our addiction patients and some other patient groups as well, and we put those on YouTube at the time. So we were using social media to engage with students, we were using social media to present some of the information to complement the material that they were getting delivered in the course as well. And we didn't really know if students were engaging with it. We didn't really know what their thoughts were on social media. So we took that one stage further. We went and had a look at the literature. We knew that although our students were engaging with social media, and we knew that students in general were engaging with social media, previous studies had suggested that educators, particularly within pharmacy, were reluctant to use social media. And that came down to issues around about privacy and concerns around about the student-educator relationship and the boundaries that have traditionally been in place, and how social media really blurred those boundaries, and should they be blurred. We find that our own staff had similar concerns, and that although some of our staff were engaging with social media, the large majority of staff weren't and said they wouldn't engage with social media. So that immediately presented us with a challenge around about how we engage with blogs or Twitter as a faculty as well. We also knew that studies within pharmacy education, mainly from the States, although there was at that point in time just one from within the UK, but mainly with the States, had raised concerns around about professionalism, privacy, and the fact that your persona online was longer than the shelf life that perhaps you thought it had, and about how employers were then going back to look at your online persona and issues around about recruitment and how you were viewed by your future profession as well. So we knew that this had happened, but within the UK we had a very small body of research on that, and actually it still remains small at the moment in relation to pharmacy. So what we did, we had 10 undergraduate project students, and we led them through the process of developing focus groups and doing a literature review around this area. They ran 6 semi-structured focus interview groups with our undergraduate pharmacy students, and there were 39 in total that took part, which was around just over a quarter of the year that we had at that point in time, of one kind of cohort of 1 year. As part of their topic guide, they wanted to explore how students define social media. So what did our students understand of social media? Because we know what we mean when we talk about it, but what do our students understand? How they used it, so how they engaged with it, what they perceived to be advantages and disadvantages of using social media, specifically looking at its use in education, and what they thought was the potential for using it as part of their undergraduate degree. We got a wealth of information back in our focus groups. We used very much of an action research approach, so we got them interacting and writing down what their thoughts were and tried to explore those a little bit more with them. We did have ethical approval granted through our school ethics committee as well, and our intention with that has always been to take that forward in terms of future research as well. It was really interesting because when we asked the participants what they defined as social media, they didn't define it in the way that literature defines it in terms of the ability to share and interact with network, and they gave us how they used it almost rather than what we would perceive to be definition. So it immediately highlighted to us that what literature defines as being social media is not necessarily how our student cohort actually define it. So interacting, keeping in contact was a big one, actually, particularly with using Facebook. Sharing and obtaining information, that related both to them going and having a look for information or us directing them to information. Communicating, and that was between both themselves. It came out that a lot of them had set up Facebook groups, and they found that that was one of their definitions, was about around that communication. And socialising, and about how they had actually set up this kind of social aspect to it in particular. So not necessarily what you would expect the traditional definitions of social media to be. So when we look at the uses of social media, communication featured again, but they used it to support their education. They used it to keep an eye on current affairs and to see what was going on in the world, and particularly relating to pharmacy, thinking about what current issues were in pharmacy. In particular, some of the students mentioned how they used it before interviews and job interviews for their pre-reg, but also how they perceived that they might use that in the future as well. They used it to share photos. They didn't mention Snapchat as much as what perhaps we've heard of it mentioned this morning, but they mentioned sharing photos both on Twitter and Instagram and on Facebook particularly as well, and for organising events. So our students have, and we knew they had set up a lot of Facebook groups, so they have one for every individual year group, they have one if they're working in team working. They usually have a social one which includes the whole cohort, and a lot of our students were using those to actually organise events and promote them via Facebook at that point in time. Mainly used on Facebook because it meant that they could control who was part of that group, and they made sure that it was only people that were in the cohort that was supposed to be in there that were actually accessing and using those groups on Facebook, and also because we couldn't access it as educators, so we didn't know what was going on. We did have one participant who didn't use social media, and didn't use social media because they didn't like the idea that someone else could access information that they were putting up, and felt that they were a very private person and social media didn't allow them to interact in the way that they would want to as a privacy kind of standard. When we asked students what they used, you can see the range of what they said they used across the bottom of the screen. Way more than what I use, and way more than what most of our colleagues use as well. So it was a real challenge to us to think about the implications that had for pharmacy education as well. We had two big concerns that came out of the study. Probably not surprising. Fitness to practice. Our students, even at an undergraduate part of their study, actually sign up to a code of conduct for pharmacy students and are required to adhere to that code of conduct throughout their 4 years of undergraduate education, and that has fitness to practice implications for them at an undergraduate level, but they also identified that behaviour that they demonstrate now has the potential to be viewed by the regulator once they come to registration and future registration and ongoing registration. So they had some real concerns around about that. And also the other concern they raised was if something goes wrong, it goes viral very quickly. And the implications of that are, even though you might want to delete something and you delete it very quickly, it potentially has gone viral before that, and people have evidence of that through screenshots or saving or whatever method people want to capture that post. And so they had some concerns over how negative behaviour quite often goes viral and the implications of that as well. Concerns of students from the focus groups, yeah. What we concluded from the study was that the ability to use social media to encourage interactive lectures and communication between educators and students conflicted heavily between the students expressing the wish for a more private online profile and for people not to be able to view those profiles as part of recruitment processes or as part of their registration and continuing fitness to practice as well. And it became evident that that was a pretty big issue for them as undergraduate students. So what we did as a result of this was we have implemented social media workshops. Last year we delivered them to all 4 years of our farm around about what appropriate online behaviour looks like. We did it in a workshop style because actually it was important for us to find out how the students felt and what they thought was online appropriate online behaviour and not just us telling them. Because actually it's quite difficult to measure, and we know that studies actually talk around about how professionalism in general is difficult to measure, but e-professionalism is just an added layer to that, and it can be quite difficult to actually even express what appropriate online behaviour looks like, never mind trying to implement that amongst a cohort of over 500 students. So we started off doing that and it got really positive evaluations from our students, and we've continued to implement that, and it's now integrated as part of our MPhorm course as well. So what we did next, we have continued to interact with students on Twitter. We have hashtags that are set up for particular modules where if information appears, any lectures that are on Twitter will retweet that along with the hashtag. However, we have come across one of our big boundaries is the lack of numbers of our educators within our faculty who are willing to use social media, who see the value of using social media, and who wish and are willing to interact with students on social media. So there are a small number of people who have a presence on social media, but there's a smaller number again who actually interact with our students on that one. That's not saying our students don't interact with us, because actually what we find is that where our students are on Twitter, they do follow what we say and what we interact with and get involved in that as well. However, in terms of taking social media and its use within the MPharma RGU forward, we've not really moved that forward hugely in terms of how we use it in the undergraduate course, apart from the workshops that we provide and how we support students in their use of it at the moment. However, we have done a scope and review of the literature and looked around about what those issues are, because we know that what our students have said is not out of line in terms of the research that has come out of other parts of the world where fitness to practice and regulated healthcare professionals have been involved in research. And if you look specifically around about professionalism, e-professionalism itself has been defined by Kane first of all in 2009, but not really taken forward in terms of any actual research for the implications that it might have for pharmacists or for pharmacy students at all. Most of the studies that have taken place have been with undergraduate students and not with practitioners, and so we are involved as educators on the pharmacy degree, not just with students at an undergraduate level, but we have a large cohort of postgraduate students that come back to continue studying with us as well. And we know that the added factor of fitness to practice is a concern at all levels of practice in terms of how our regulator views appropriate online behaviour. And to date, there's been very little has come out of our regulator, the GPHC, around about online personas and fitness to practice, but our professional bodies have started to release guidance and try and support practitioners as well. So my interest has grown, not just from the undergraduate cohort, but to the postgraduate and the registered cohort as well. So this year, our undergraduate students, we had 8 this year, who have just completed a study, have just done their data collection, where we used an online hosted network where, I don't know if you're particularly aware of the WE communities, but they represent healthcare professionals from all different areas of practice. And we have a specific one on WE pharmacists. And I keep saying to people that's not because we're little, it's just because that's what our community is called. But we hosted two chats on here looking specifically at online presence and what people that interacted with that particular hosted network actually thought of social media and of the network as well. So we these chats take place on a Thursday night and they're an hour in length. But what one of the things we found was that the chat was never restricted to an hour. So when we've analysed this, we've actually opened up that time frame to a 5-hour time frame, because that's when we identified that the majority of chat actually took place on this.
Can I just show my emails? Is that part of Twitter?
It is, yeah. So the We Communities is they have a website that captures it all. So this does our analytics for us, and it hosts the transcripts of the chats and kind of all of the reach and the, all of the analytics with regards to that. But the chats themselves take place on Twitter, and they're hosted either by the relevant We Pharmacist Twitter handle or by someone who's facilitating that
so
as well.
We Pharmacist is your specific?
Yep, so there's We Nurses, there's We Midwives, there's We Paramedics.
There
yeah.
We LDPs
as
well.
Yep.
So We Nurses is national, not just Aberdeen?
Yep. No. This is an independently hosted, so it's got nothing to do with us.
Okay.
It's independently hosted within the UK. So it's a UK-based hosted
so
network.
So they do your analysis and everything.
Yeah.
They turn that back to
yeah. And it's pretty instant as well. So it will give you the analytics for an hour's chat, but if you go on, you can manipulate that data to get what you need. Yep, so that's what our students are currently in the process of tweeting us doing, which is actually really exciting for us, because what we found was over the course of two chats, we had a reach of over 4 million. So the analytics tells us that that reached over 4 million people on Twitter over those two evenings, which is pretty huge when you consider the impact that that could potentially have as well. So it's probably helpful to say that our students were elated, but we were even more elated at the success of the chat. They are currently analysing those two chats. So some of the things we looked at was why do people use Twitter? What are the best and worst features of Twitter? Examples of any negative experiences? And interestingly, we had people openly talking about times where they'd been stalked or trolled. And actually some of that stalking didn't just happen on Twitter. It happened in person as a result of what happened on Twitter. But they had taken some time out and had come back and were openly talking about that. So that was quite a learning experience for us. Being involved in that chat on the evening about how we actually facilitated that to go forward.
Is it we as in us, or does it stand for something?
And no, it's we as in us and everybody. So, for example, there are evenings where I've been involved in We Pharmacists or We Nurses chats or We Doctors chats. If there's been a topic that has particularly grabbed my attention, then I will join in.
Is it online all the time then? Is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever get any? Because you obviously just. We AHPs like alphabet.
Yes.
Do you ever get sort of combined Wees?
Yep.
That means something else in Scotland, obviously.
We allied health professionals is
one
of the leaders of We allied health professionals.
We have had.
I'm asking because we sorry, we
gets confusing after a while.
We teach on medical prescribing.
Yep.
So obviously we have a group of mixed professionals.
Yep.
And this would be a very useful way of encompassing all of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they do host joint chats at points as well. So what they ask you to do is if you've got a specific topic that you're interested in, that you contact them. You don't have to have any particular credentials to host chats, but they ask for some pre-chat information. They'll ask for you to do a summary after that chat has taken place as well, and it doesn't have to be a huge summary. It can just be a little kind of this is a kind of snapshot of what happened during the chat, and where they will promote that. So they promoted these chats kind of daily on the lead up to them. They usually promote them a week or 2 weeks in advance. So we recognise that people look at things on Twitter, and if it's not immediate, then they don't often take kind of note of that. So they will promote them repeatedly as well. But the facility is there for multiple professions to work together and chat. We have had instances where that's happened as well. I've been involved with We Pharmacists since we ran our first project, thinking and planning about how we could actually do some combined research with them. And so the results of this will really inform their work as well as kind of our own in terms of the WE Pharmacist Network.
Just in the healthcare area.
I want to say yes, but no, actually, there are, I think there are other aspects on there as well. So if you just go on to Google and type in WE Communities, it will tell you at the top of it about WE. It says about WE, and they've got lots of different ones that are on there as well. It's one of the most widely used hosted networks on Twitter for any kind of, particularly within the healthcare professionals, and the chats are fairly regular as well.
Do you encourage students just to have a identity just for that as opposed to their own personal identity?
Maybe when they're going, look at the
We've had a lot of discussion this year with our 8 project students who had ranged from, interestingly, people that don't use Twitter at all through to people who have only private Twitter accounts and people who have completely public Twitter accounts. I have a very defined view of my presence on Twitter, as in I am me. I can never separate my personal from my professional because I am who I am, and you get aspects of both, and that is how I approach my Twitter account at all times. I can see there are reasons why people want to separate it, but the reality is you are you, so you can be found and you can be searched and people will interact with you, and people who think they have a an anonymous Twitter profile will always be identified somehow anyway, so it's very much personal choice for me around about. Would you agree, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I started off having two for that ready, so I had one that I would do for kind of work and one that was personal, and it became just a mind tool to kind of, I couldn't manage both, and so I just thought, you know what, I am me, I'm just careful about what I do, and you know,
I'll come from mental health, and that's my background in mental health nursing, and it is really imperative I separate out, and I still feel that, because that's my background, and yeah, you can find me if you want. Look at my thing, you ain't gonna see anything about me because it's all set to private, and you can identify who I am and probably find out where I live if you want to.
Yeah,
because there's lots of aspects there. But I'm really struggling with that, to demark myself out and have that one Twitter account. But I think that's because of my background, and I have to maintain my own safety, my family as well.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think we're all in the same boat, nursing background. It's not just what you were saying about, because I can really truly identify with this thing about fitness to practice, and because we have the same issues with the pre-reg students and the post-reg. But personally, I struggle with this completely because I don't do any of this for very good reasons. I just, you know, I just don't want my life and my world and my family out there.
And I think that's a very personal and valid choice. And no matter what choice you make, it's got to be the right one for you.
Yeah. But I can see the value.
I mean, you can have, I think one of the things that we've identified is around about people that don't, for example, have photos of themselves on Twitter or a photo and only use the egg.
Yeah.
Actually, we find that people tend not to interact with those particular characters very well. Absolutely.
It's interesting because I've just gone into it, and the WE Nurses was set up by a lady who was an agency nurse and found herself professionally isolated. And that's really interesting for us because you assume that you work in a community of nursing or you work in a community of pharmacy or whatever.
Yeah.
But actually some people don't.
And actually that with pharmacy in particular, we find that 80%, about 80% of our community pharmacists are therefore isolated, and that is one of the things that people have mentioned in here. But the other thing that people have mentioned as part of these chats has been the ability to obliterate geographical barriers, but also the professional barriers. So we have chief pharmacists who have interacted with these chats who in real practice our undergraduate students would never be able to interact with, but actually they were interacting back and forward, and what you can learn from people is huge.
Real value for our course, because you can get the pharmacists talking to the physios, talking to them, which is what they should be doing in practice. Some of our physios particularly are independent practitioners. They work for themselves, they run their own businesses. That's very isolating, like this lady who's an agency nurse. You don't sit in an organisation, so therefore you don't sit, you don't get the updates, you don't keep the
Yeah.
I mean, I was just thinking about what Eric said this morning about communication and communication skills using social media, and I think that's probably something, because we probably all, this has been something new, so social media is something new for us, and we didn't grow up with it all, you know, through school, the rest of it.
Yeah.
It's actually, it now becomes something else about teaching people how to use it, you know, and allow them to learn how to use it in the way that probably when I was at school, we were taught how to write job application forms and CVs and letters and journals, applications, and it's something like, it's akin to that, I think, now, is learning them how to use it and be responsible with it.
Yeah, I think that's, because obviously for my generation, how to use it for stuff, but for the younger generation who've grown up with it as a social thing when they were kids, it's then teaching them a different way of dealing with it.
Yeah.
But then you get into the issues of the longevity.
Yeah. That probably quite nicely takes me on to my last slide, because I'm just very aware of the time. No, not at all.
That's
one of my issue, my kind of, I suppose, interests around about this is around about the e-professional aspect of it, the fitness to practice, the guidance that's been produced, how useful is that? And actually I'm just undertaking a PhD around about e-professionalism, looking specifically at pharmacy, but actually looking at that, the wider healthcare professions as part of that as well. So if you are interested, please do keep in touch as well. It would be really interesting, particularly given all of your backgrounds, thinking about fitness to practice and how we take those healthcare professions responsibly into an online environment.
My PhD started, I've dropped off that and doing something else now, but mine started with identity.
Okay. That's interesting.
So I'm on the same lines. Yeah.
And I think for anyone who's a registered healthcare professional, professional identity is huge in terms of who you are, but like they were saying this morning, those blurred lines between personal and social, I don't think it's a negative thing, but I think what we need to look at is responsible online presence. We debated doing focus groups with our colleagues, but given the conversations we've had with our colleagues, we decided not to pursue that one with our students. We know why they don't use it, and we know that they're not going to change anytime soon at the moment. So there are probably half a dozen of us that are fairly active on Twitter, fairly active on other social media sites as well.
How many of your team?
There's probably, so in our teaching group, there's probably 12 to 15.
And across the course, maybe about 30.
I'm one of six.
Yeah. I mean, I think actually across anybody that teaches on the M farm, there's probably about 30 of us.
Yeah.
And there's probably
half a dozen.
Yeah. No more than half a dozen that are using it. And actually probably only about four that are using it regularly and using it to interact with students in any way.
So this might be an opportunity then for some collaboration. Because I think we'd be keen to do some, trying to.
Yeah. No, that's...
Yeah.
That sounds great.
So
all
you
my
could use us instead.
Absolutely, no. Well, no, absolutely. And our, my undergraduate projects every year will be around social media now as part of what I'm doing.
Well,
so we'd be delighted to. But no, I mean, research can, we can do things online. And and actually, if you are, I would definitely recommend the We Communities for any healthcare professional to have a look at what goes on.
Do your students join you with those?
We've discovered that our students lurk, so they will follow chats that go on if it captures their attention. But one of what they've said is that they don't want to say.
If you're lurking around,
yeah.
It's no good.
Somebody sitting in the last group, and she said yes, she found that even using Twitter, she said she found that students don't interact with one another.
Yeah.
That they will go on, they'll retweet, they'll. But
yeah.
They don't actually.
Well, what our students said last week actually was that they wouldn't necessarily want to say something in case it was wrong in front of people that are more experienced. So one of the benefits of We Pharmacists is that they host a wide range of chats. So we've hosted chats specifically with students, and professionals have joined in as well along the way. So there is that ability to draw them in from lots of different areas of practice. You need to get the topic right. And you need to get the facilitator
that,
right.
You know, someone steps into that conversation who's one of your students and causes a problem.
Yeah.
Who monitors that?
If it's one of our students, it's normally me that does that.
So you do have to follow up.
Yeah. No, we do follow up on anything that's raised as inappropriate at all. So,
Interesting.
Thank you so much.